And welcome back to the Joe's Art History Podcast, a podcast which celebrates all things art historical every single day. It's the final episode of season one. Yep, after 35 weeks of non-stop art historical content, I thought now would be the perfect time to round off season one in style. And I promise you, we're going out on a high. On today's episode, I sit down with art historian and artist Joanne Oates to discuss one of art history's most iconic female artists, Georgia O'Keeffe. O'Keeffe is one of those artists who was all too quickly pigeonholed as a creative who solely painted flowers and that contained highly sexualized undertones. I'm happy to report, however, she is far more than that, and thanks to the continued efforts of art historians around the world, as well as a recent blockbuster exhibition at Tate Modern in 2016, O'Keeffe's outpour has been rightly re-evaluated, showing the artist in all her glory. Joanne, aka Jo, takes us on a whistle-stop tour of some of O'Keeffe's outpour, and we discuss five works which highlight the varied creative developments of the artist's life. O'Keeffe was an absolute powerhouse, not only as an artist but as a woman, and I can think of no better artist to round off season one of the Joe's Art History Podcast with. So sit back and relax as Joe and I discuss the amazing Georgia O'Keeffe. First question, the most obvious sort of place to begin. Where was the first time that you remember seeing O'Keeffe's work?
Yeah, so I remember I got a calendar as a Christmas present, I think when I was about 13. And it was just, you know, it's one of those things, just like I was into art as a kid and I was always into art. So I was always getting sort of arty presents kind of thing. And I remember I'd seen a Georgia O'Keeffe documentary. It was maybe a BBC documentary about her, and I'd mentioned it to someone, and then I got this Christmas present. And on the whole, it was a lot of her flower paintings, which obviously a lot of people know her for, like the Jimson Weed, White Flower, and sort of some skull paintings. So, you know, but as I was going through them, I remember this particular piece just really like made me stop in my tracks, even at 13. Like there was something else going on behind it. It wasn't a nice painting of a flower stem. It was really abstract. I mean, there was something sort of vaguely floral about it, but it wasn't what it seemed to be. There was something going on. It was all sort of vaguely sexual, and it was the grey lines with black, blue and yellow, which was, I think, around 1923. And it's like it pulls you in. I mean, it's got a vague sexual tone to it, and a lot of people have tried to attribute sort of that sexuality to a lot of her work, but there's a lot of things going on here. It's very feminine, but it's very powerful. It's just really made me think there's something more to this artist than just flower paintings, and I wanted to know more. So that's really where she came to my attention first.
And can I just say, I think for a 13-year-old, like that's incredibly switched on to even associate. Like when I was 13, the biggest thing in my week was getting the Top of the Pops magazine. So we were very different. Very different teenagers. But you're so right, though. I love what you say there about how this painting draws you in, because for me it's almost like a vacuum that you almost want to step into this canvas. But she does this beautifully, O'Keeffe, but she really got tarred with this brush very early on as a flower painter, if you will. Maybe let's take it back a couple of steps. So for people listening who have never heard of the name Georgia O'Keeffe, could you just give us a very brief overview of who Georgia O'Keeffe was?
Yeah, sure. I mean, she was born in 1887, I think, and in Wisconsin, in the States. She learned how to do watercolors and when she was young. And I think she studied at the Chicago Institute of Art. And then she went to New York and she showed in a group exhibition, and she met the owner of the gallery where she showed, Alfred Stieglitz, who she then later got into a relationship with. And he was a lot older than her. She became like his muse almost. One of the things that sort of connects to the sexuality part is that he took quite a lot of amazing photographs of her that were published in New York magazines, I think, and they were quite sort of sexualized. And I think that's really where people started to like sort of sexualize her work, because they'd seen seen her as an artist, but then they've seen her in these sort of, you know, really beautiful photographs, but they are quite sort of provocative, a lot of them. So I think that's what sort of gave her pictures a little bit more of a bit of a sort of sexual lens that people have attributed to them.
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree. And even though the paintings of these flowers and, you know, Stieglitz images of O'Keeffe were exhibited together, so it was technically a joint exhibition. People didn't see O'Keeffe as an artist in that respect. They saw her as this gentleman's muse, and it really tarred her reputation for quite a while. And as you said, you know, she's tried so hard to sort of move away from this idea of these very sexually charged images, which is why she takes a bit of a turn, actually. And you've included this in another one of your images as well. So she starts as a way of like rebelling against the sort of sexually charged idea of her work. She starts painting scenes of New York in these very sort of kind of semi-abstract ways, but she's got this amazing quote where she talks about, you can't paint New York as you see it. You have to paint New York as it makes you feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a, I mean, I've never been to New York, but I feel that with London, where I live, there's a feeling that a big city, the energy, but also how alone it can make you feel sometimes, that the sheer sort of scope and scape of it and how you are minuscule within it. And I think her New York series is brilliant at that. But funny how she kind of rebelled against people associating making her work sexual, and that was something she didn't want.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem a lot of the time with women artists, is that you know, there's a sort of, in a way that they don't look for in male artists, they sort of 100%. They want to sort of sexualize pictures that women paint. So I think that's a problem that she had, and unfortunately I think it's still a problem today, to be honest with you. But the one that I shared with you, which is A Street, 1926, what's lovely about that is there, like you were saying about that city vibe, it's got a sort of slight sense of claustrophobia about it, because it's all, like, the way it's painted is like that sort of high ups, but the perspective is like, you know, sort of looking down a street with very, very tall buildings that you almost can't see the top of in your peripheral vision. But the way that it's painted is that you're just sort of literally the walls are closing in. So I think that's sometimes it's both a beautiful picture of the city, but it's also got that kind of slightly, you know, the negative side of it as well. And there's that sort of duality going on at the same time. But I mean, I think like you, I think we've discussed off air, is that, you know, hadn't really seen these paintings until the Tate retrospective a few years ago.
Yeah, oh my goodness, this, so I will hold my hands up now. I don't know, and I feel I say this in every episode of this that I do, but I honestly do not think my art history, my undergrad art history degree touched on Georgia O'Keeffe, because I had never heard of her. And then all of a sudden this huge big exhibition was going on in London and everyone was going bonkers over it. And I was like, who is this woman? Because essentially the lead image, the cover image that was plastered on every bus and every tube stop was this Jim Sinclair white flower, which of course is so iconic and was the cover image for the incredible catalogue that Tate put together. And as I said to you earlier, you know, when I walked into this exhibition, I was like, all right, okay, we'll go see it. We might, you know, I'm one, you might as well try it, because you don't know if you don't try it. So I went along. I was like, don't really fancy seeing that, you know, an exhibition full of flowers. And ate my words, these New York scapes were amazing. So colourful, so just really powerful. And they really spoke to, you know, like you said, there's this idea of this city sort of dwarfing you from your viewpoint. It's sort of stretching up, it's endless, but there's like a glimmer in the sky that there's freedom, but you can't, it was just amazing. But as I said to you earlier, everyone was very much sort of like hot footing it through that gallery to get to the flower paintings. I was like, these are brilliant. Where's everyone going?
I think that's what's so great about that exhibition. I completely applaud the Tate doing it, because there was so much work. There was so much diverse work, and showed all the styles that she'd experimented with. There was abstract, there was sort of touches of cubism, you know, like Kandinsky in there. There was like beautiful color pieces, there was some very monochrome pieces. I mean, there's some really highly abstract stuff where she'd literally just done some curves or a brush stroke or whatever. And I think that's the thing, is everyone just thinks of the flowers and just it's sort of selling her short as an artist, because she was so curious. And what was so interesting about the flowers, I found this quote that she said about flowers, that she said, "I hate flowers. I paint them because they're cheaper than models and they don't move." Which I thought was amazing. And I think that's says something about her personality. I think that's what another reason why I was kind of drawn to her when I started to find out more about her. She's got this sort of tough, you know, like feminine power that she's just going to carry on regardless and paint what she wants. Like at all times in her life, she had people, usually men, telling her how to paint, what to paint, you know, and she just always tried to just do what she wanted to do. And I always just really admired that about her.
So in preparation for this podcast, you have like hit the nail on the head there. Something that I didn't realize, because I had never heard her speak, and I think there's something when you hear an artist's own voice talking about not even just their work, just what they do on a day-to-day basis. She is really headstrong. She is an absolute powerhouse, really, and she takes absolutely no nonsense. There's a brilliant interview that's done, I think it might be for the Whitney, and I'll leave it in the show notes below. And Joe, I'll
Please
send it
do,
to you in email
yeah.
if you haven't seen it. And it's someone interviewing her at her ranch in New Mexico, and they're like, "Oh, it's very good of you that that Alfred Stieglitz lets you come up here." And she was like, "I don't get his permission. I do what I want." And
Yes, I know.
I was like, "Oh, she's amazing. She's just amazing." And so, to the point, matter of fact, you know, I'll do it my way on my terms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you want to come for the ride, great. If not, you know where the door is. And I really, really respect that. She's such a fascinating person. And the more that I've dug into this for this recording, I just have so much respect for her. So what I didn't know, for example, with the Tate exhibition, was that they put that on essentially to smash that idea that she, air quotes here, is a flower
Yeah.
painter. And also at the time, I don't know if this has changed, but at the time there was no Georgia O'Keeffe paintings in any of Britain's big
That's so
collections.
surprising, isn't it?
Yeah. And considering, you know, in 2014, this Jimson Weed, you know, the key piece of this exhibition, which was lent to the Tate, was bought at auction for 44
Yeah.
million in 2014, which at the time completely smashed the record for a female artist. But that's a term she hated as well, though. She hated being a female artist. She was like, "I am an artist. What does my gender matter?" She was an incredible person. And the video that I was telling you about, she walks you through her home. It's very serene, very minimal, actually, and really beautiful. Really, really beautiful. So she had style, class. Yeah, she was just a bit of a badass, really.
I mean, to go, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but to go to New Mexico on her own as a woman and just say this is where I'm going to spend the majority of my time. I mean, she still came back to New York and did shows and stuff, but she spent the majority of time in New Mexico as you know, on this ranch, this ghost ranch. And you know, it's just sort of such a pioneer and a like warrior and just doing it on her own. And I think that's just a really amazing. It's funny actually, the interviews you see of her when she's older, because she died in 1986 and the latter years of her life, she actually really reminds me of my great grandmother, who was very fortunate to know in the last few years of her life. But you know, she was an East Ender. She was like a real kind of that kind of grown up in really high tough times. She really reminds me of her. So there might be some of that that I resonate with. But so it's that sort of tough female feminine power that comes across, and I think that comes across in her paintings as well. And that's the feminine nature of it. It's not the flowers and the sort of soft side. It's actually the strength that comes through, I think, for me.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And she's just, like you said previously, she has this range. She's not this one trick pony, if you will. She is constantly experimenting, expanding, and really experimenting. But she has a love of color, which is really, really evident. But not even just bright, vivid, beautiful colors. In the painting that we've discussed, a street, set in New York, it's very sort of dark colors, but there's something so still really inviting, very beautiful. And if we go on very quickly to talk about, as we've mentioned, she spent a lot of her time in New Mexico, which was she kind of went through it as like a happy accident, actually. She was making her way back to New York on a summer holiday with her sister, and then they stopped by New Mexico, and she just completely fell in love with this really barren landscape. And it was a desert. When you say desert, what you think and what she presents to you on a canvas couldn't be further away from, there's so many colors, particularly the work that you sent me, the Black Mesa landscape. For me, there just seems to be these beautiful, like almost cloth-like folds in these
Yeah, I mean, for me,
mountains.
it sort of totally transforms how I look at landscapes, really. I mean, my own work as an artist, just looking at them with shapes and forms of color and tone, and not. And they're not trying to be precise. She's not trying to like capture, oh, that's definitely that hill or that mountain or whatever. But it's more a sense of the landscapes. It actually really reminds me of Cezanne. If you sort of go back to some of Cezanne's works, very loose, less sort of the impressionists that came after him, but just that kind of lots of color and just shape. And I also love Cezanne as well, and it just really reminds me of that. But it also, I mean, for me, I didn't really know much about New Mexico before I discovered Georgia O'Keeffe, and it just made me really fascinated with this part of America. I've now become slightly obsessed with wanting to go there, I have to say, because you can visit Ghost Ranch, but it's more like for retreats and things. It's not owned by Georgia O'Keeffe, family or foundation, although you can go to, I believe, her house that she then subsequently lived in Abiquiu, which is down the road. But yeah, I just really want I'd love to go there. I've never been, and I'd like to find an opportunity to go and paint these landscapes myself at some point.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And no wonder though, like she makes it this like really inviting place. And the painting that we're talking about, 1930, she's in her 30s, I think. She's about 37, but she would go on her own and she would be up at the crack of dawn. She converted an old car to be a mobile studio so she could drive out and fit a canvas in the back of the car and paint in this baking heat from morning to night. And she loved it. And I think she became almost part of the landscape. And that's so obvious when you look at this, you kind of almost want to melt into it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sort of that sense of painting what you feel that we were saying before. It's not, oh, here's a really barren desert. This is how this place makes me feel. And that's what she's painting, I feel. So
No, I think it's brilliant. And then, as you said, that this is a place she returned to again and again. She was, cutting between sort of New York and New Mexico. And then when her partner, Alfred Ziegler's, passed away, this is about, oh my goodness, 1946. She stays in New York for a little while, and she just thinks, oh, actually, this isn't for me. And I think in about 1949, she moves to New Mexico permanently, and that's kind of where she stays. But she makes endless amounts. She was prolific. She really never stopped. And I must say, the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum, and I'll leave a link to that website in the show notes below, they have an amazing online archive of not only her works, but the items in her house, things that she used to wear, private photographs that she's taken. So you really do get a sense of, you get the measure of who she was and how much she loved
Yeah,
being here,
totally.
being in this.
I mean, that's the thing. I was quite impressed myself. I mean, there's not a lot of artists whose you know, the people looking after their legacy are sort of that sort of open about sharing that sort of stuff, unless you actually go there. And so it's a really, really amazing archive. And you can really just see the range of her work. That's just always the surprising thing.
I think it's also important to note that, you know, as we said previously, you know, she was kind of tarred with this brush with, or her paintings are quite sexual, but very, very soon after this, you know, moving into the sort of 40s and 50s, she became really well known in America. People knew her work. She was relatively probably one of the first living female artists who had some form of acclaim. Before this point, it really wasn't considered, air quotes here, an okay profession for a woman to be a painter. So she was really up against it in terms of representation and breaking the mold, really. And people do hold her up as this woman that sort of was the first to sort of bang the drum for independent female artists pursuing that as a career and not as a, again, air quotes, you know, acceptable, nice pastime.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I was watching a clip back the other day about what it was, an artist called Judy Chicago, who you might have heard of. She was saying that she's a very feminist, known as a very feminist artist, and she was saying what a huge fan of Georgia O'Keeffe, but Georgia O'Keeffe didn't like to think of herself as a feminist, and as you said, didn't want to be seen as a woman artist. But I think as a woman, you can still really, really connect with her work because of her, as much about her story as anything else. And, you know, just that whole sort of sense of really understanding like colour and shapes and how we respond to our environment and just looking at the world in a slightly different way. And I think she does that beautifully. And I think, you know, I think I just found that quite empowering. It's like just someone having their own voice and just really like putting it on the canvas.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for anyone that hasn't, you know, that wasn't in London or has never heard of this retrospective, do go onto Tate's website. They've got a wealth of information, and also the Met Museum in New York, the Whitney as well. There's loads. I'll leave links to all these things in the show notes. Or even just Google, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe. There's fantastic, you know, very short introductory videos to who she is as an artist and that give you a very quick overview. She, and you'll see sort of firsthand visually, you know, her range of works, how powerful these are. And yeah, she's just someone that continues to surprise me. The more I dig into her, the more I sort of respect her. One of the other works that you sent, which I was like, oh my goodness, this is the work that I see, because there's a very, very famous photograph of a book when she's in her 70s and she's in the desert and she's got one of her paintings on an easel. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is the painting on that easel.
And I think it's the painting that when I look at it, I just see my great grandmother. But it's the picture that reminds me of it the most, because she's just defiantly standing next to this massive, massive canvas in the middle of the desert being interviewed. And if you ever see a clip of the interview, she does come across as a sort of slightly grumpy old woman, but she's just still just trying to maintain her unique voice and just sort of don't try and say I'm these other things, don't put something on me, just look at the work. So yeah, Pelvis series, Red with Yellow, which was made at Ghost Ranch, and she started to pick up bones from the desert floor and began to paint them, but she paints some of them like the skulls and things like that, but quite often she's painting the shapes in between. So the holes in a pelvis bone, she's looking at the sky through the hole. So it's as much about what's going on around the object as it is painting the object itself. And it creates these amazing shapes, and these shapes come back again and again in her work, whether they're shapes in bones or they're shapes of rocks. There's a whole series of rock paintings that was in the retrospective. And it's just her very unique perspective of looking at the world, which I love. And I think this is a really good representation of it.
What I love when you sent me this was, I know I can't remember if this was in the retrospective or not, because I, like, as we said earlier, there was a lot of works. And I don't know how you felt, but I needed to sit down after I left. I just felt, because it ended up being something like 16, 17 rooms. Every room was a different theme. And when I left and then you hit the gift shop, which was just everything in your face, I was like, whoa, I understand why there's a cafe. I need to sit down. So I can't remember if this was in the retrospective at the Tate or not, but I when I saw the title, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was a pelvis bone. And when you say that and you know that and you look through it, you're like, yeah, of course it is, because you can see the indents, there's cracks. But oh, and just, but it's her handling of color in this that you kind of almost want to dive in to like the negative space, into that yellow, to see what's going on
Yeah,
behind
it's
it.
almost like that's the sky and the sun, and that's the beyond. It's like the beyond what she's seeing immediately in front of her. Like it's a bit like going back to the street painting. It's the sort of light at the end. And I think she's, there's something about painting anything to do with bones that I think is really connects with her own sort of mortality. Or any kind of mortality, because it's like, well, this is what we're this is what who we are when we left. We're just this thing, and obviously the animals' bones that she was picking up, she was sort of you're looking at that and imagining that animal's life. So if you're looking at it through that perspective, you can't help but sort of think about those things. And I think that perhaps, that's something that was going on in her head at the time.
Well, absolutely. And it's, the idea of, morality and using, skulls and bones to remind your viewer, of their impending morality. This is what eventually you will be reduced to, is a theme that's been in the history of art since the beginning of time, really. It's a constant theme that reoccurs, but she picks it up and makes it her own. And she kind of, underlyingly, she's kind of reminding you or confronting you with death. And people tend to, I don't know, kind of shy away from the idea of bones. You think, oh gosh, no, I don't want to paint that. If anyone listening's ever done any sort of still lifes, no one's really warning towards, okay, I've got an apple and I've got some bones here, so we're going to paint it all. You just don't do that. So I just think she deals with things in such an unusual way. And even when she paints, full skulls of animals that she's come across in the desert that's died, she includes, it's included very sort of surrealist almost in this incredible sort of desert landscape. She incorporates flowers, and there's just a lot going on in her paintings, even when there doesn't look like there is. And I think that she's brilliant. Like, you have to look again at these, and I'll say it once and say it again. It's always good to go and revisit these and spend some time, because, even if we go back to, the New Mexico, the painting that we spoke a few minutes ago about the hills and the mountains, you could just look at that and go, oh, okay, it's hills and mountains. But actually, when you really spend time looking at it, looking at the colors, the tones, it just takes you somewhere else. And I think it's very much that Instagram thing of, you've got 3 seconds and then you have to move on. But these, you owe it to yourself to like spend
I
some
think that's
time
really
with these.
interesting what you're saying
They're
about going
brilliant.
back, because obviously for this, I went back and sort of was looking at her work, and there was a lot in that retrospective, but there were a lot of things that weren't in there that I still hadn't seen that I found on the internet. I was like, oh my God, is I can't believe that I hadn't seen that. And as you said, so prolific. But also what I really, really recognized is having had her as this sort of influence in my sort of art. Well, I studied art history as well, and also just sort of in the back of my mind as an artist that I like, I realized by really, really delving in more recently just how much her work has had an influence on my own artwork and my own paintings in a sort of like unknowing way. It's sort of that use of color and shapes and things. It's sort of like unduly kind of I not unduly, but that sounds negative, but just sort of it's sort of subconsciously, I think, sort of seeped in there. And so I'm looking at her pieces online and going, oh my God, that's a bit like that piece I did a couple of years ago, or this is a piece I've done recently. And it's just like, and it just made me really happy, because it was just like, oh gosh, I think she's had way more of an influence on me than I actually even realized, just because of the scope of the work how many pieces she's made.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that's the thing, you just don't know when, you know, subconsciously these things are burned on the brain, you know, and when they stick with you, and when you have that moment with a work of art or an artist who you really admire, and you could look at them for, you know, days and days and never get boring, it does very subconsciously seep into not even, you know, your own art, but perhaps how you dress and the color schemes that you enjoy and that you know decorate your home with. But you sent me the final image that you sent me a link to a series that you have also done on your website, because as you've said, you're an artist as well, and this was your Horizon series.
Yeah, and what really surprised me is, like, when this is a piece that she did called The Beyond in the early 70s, and she was 84 around that time, and she was starting to lose her eyesight. And I thought, what was really amazing, when you look at the work she was doing at this time, she's just bringing everything down to its complete simplicity. It's just blocks of color or a line or a brush stroke. It's nothing too complicated. It actually goes back to some of the stuff that she was experimenting in her early part of her career, really experimenting with abstraction. And sort of without me realizing it or think about it too much, I think it's sort of influenced some of my own work. So I've just done this Horizons piece series that I've sort of completed for now, but I might go back to them, where it's just looking at horizons in their most minimalist form. So it's the blocks of color, usually just three blocks of color, but using the paint and the texture of the paint to create the light and shade, so that at any time of the day you look at them, they will look slightly different because of the texture in the paint and the way the light in the room is hitting them. And it goes back to that whole thing about Georgia O'Keeffe, is just sort of looking at something and painting what you feel about it rather than what's there. Because some of the colours I'm using in that Horizon series aren't colours that you would necessarily see. Some of them are on horizons, whether they be the land or the sea. But she just, in this Beyond piece, you can't help feeling that she's contemplating her age. She's contemplating her work. She's using color in this really, really beautifully strong way. There's this like light blue, and then this white line through it, and this very dark sort of lower half. You know, you're not sure whether we're looking at sea or a mountain range or something. I'm not, you know, you're not sure what it is. And I think, but it's definitely this sense of looking at a horizon. And when we look at horizons, it's all about our place in time. It's our past, present, and future, because where we are as a viewer is the present, and what's behind us is the past, and what is what we're looking at, the future, or are we contemplating our mortality again? So I think that's what's going on for me in this piece, and I think that's what horizons generally do for a lot of people.
Oh, I could not agree more. That is just, oh, you've nailed it there. But you have, though, because think about it, when you look at a horizon or, you know, a sunset or anything, you instantly enter a mode of reflection, or you acknowledge your present moment that you're in. Sometimes if it's really beautiful, you think about people. And that's what this is, you know, and what horizons do, and perhaps what she is an artist, you know. It's called The Beyond, as you said, you know, she was in her sort of late 70s. Oh, no, late 80s, sorry, by this point. Yeah, I don't really know what else I can add to that, Jo. Yeah. I just think that, yeah.
Thank you. I'm doing well, get done. A nice star.
Oh, beautifully put, beautifully put. And I don't know if we've mentioned, but O'Keeffe went on to live a very long and healthy life. I mean, she lost her eyesight sort of very near the end, but she lived to the ripe old age of 98 and continue making right up until the end, really.
She had a lot, she had help. She'd moved into a house in Abiquiu, which is another part of New Mexico. And she, I think there was a family or that were helping her, just sort of, you know, with her sort of day-to-day stuff. And there was a young man who was helping her literally sort of choose paints and, you know, just help her create her work because, you know, she was frail. And as you say, he was kind of her eyes, I think. Yeah, she was still working right up to the end. I think that was what's amazing. What I didn't put in the ones I sent you, but what is really lovely is to go and look at some of the paintings of the house she lived in Abiquiu. And there's this door that she keeps painting over and over again. It's this big double door and it's like a square. And she just paints it over and over again. And whilst it's a really simple image, they're all really compelling because she's painting them at different times of the day. So the light is different and the shadows are different. And it just shows she's still exploring. She's still being inquisitive and curious right up to the end, which is, just really, really amazing.
And, you know, maybe a nice link back to somebody like Cezanne or maybe one of the Impressionists, you know, they took the same subject and again and again and again studied the same thing, but at different times of the day, different times of year, and the effect that light has on one point, how you can look at it 1 minute and then 5 minutes later and it's slightly different somehow. And what I didn't say earlier was you sent a great comparison shot of a Cezanne landscape and I was like, oh my gosh, I would have paired O'Keeffe and Cezanne's work, because it's just these, like you said, it's the impression, it's the feeling they want you to get more than sort of hitting the nail on the head, sort of accurate, sort of
absolutely. And there's the sort of the richness of the color in which I think is very similar as well. It's like that sort of, you know, it's almost like it's like you sort of want to touch it. It's like kind of, you know, mold it or something. I'm not quite sure how to describe it really, but definitely had that kind of sensibility about it.
Jo, I have loved talking to you so, so much about Georgia O'Keeffe. This has been such a learning experience for me. It has, you know, given me a complete new appreciation of what a powerhouse of a woman that she is. Is there anything you want to say that you think, oh, I haven't touched on this yet before we sort of head off, or, you know, for someone perhaps who hasn't seen O'Keeffe's work before, is there, you know, a nice starting point?
Yeah, there was a really good documentary done by the Imagine series, the BBC. I think it was actually when the Tate retrospective was on, which I believe is on YouTube. It's definitely, it's a really, really, it really does go into her sort of story really well, I think. It's Alan Yentob. And so I think that's a good starting point. But, you know, just Google around. There's some amazing Pinterest boards out there of her work. I think what's great about her is I think there's something that anyone will like, whether it's the cityscapes or the mountains or the flowers even, or the more abstract pieces, you know, the still lives of the skulls, etc. I think that she's got a lot to offer anyone who's interested in art.
I would completely agree. In preparation for this, I was listening to the Great Women Artists podcast, actually, and they have an episode on O'Keeffe, and Katie Hessel, who runs that, she is interviewing one of Georgia O'Keeffe's, not biographer, but she's one of the sort of lead curators of this big exhibition that toured in America. And she said that she didn't actually know about O'Keeffe's New Mexico paintings, and she didn't actually think very much. She'd come across them, she hadn't really thought too much of them, but what she really liked was her cityscapes. And then she said it took her to actually go to the desert where she was painting and actually see the environment, because she was born and raised in New York City, she'd never left, so she couldn't really empathize with what she was trying to create. So, and I wondered if that's why when I went to the retrospective, I really chimed in with the street series, because that's what I knew. And as the sort of desert series went on and on and on, as brilliant as it was, I was like, oh, whoa, this is getting way surrealist. And, you know, it can get way out there at times. But it just sort of struck a chord with me where I was like, oh gosh, I wonder if it's that age old thing, you know, you travel and you expand your mind. And you know, it's the same with art. Once you when you travel a little bit, or art allows
Yeah.
you to kind of do that without really, you know, leaving. But yeah, it was just a very interesting thing. So I'd be interested to hear from anyone listening if they find, you know, the desert series maybe a bit sort of cold and off-putting, or people that love it, if they've experienced some sort of travel in a desert some way, or that very sort of like barren, colorful landscapes. It was just an interesting
There's
way
also
of looking at
there's a
things.
really great gallery I follow based in Taos, which was one of the first places that Georgia O'Keeffe visited in New Mexico, called Western Gallery. You can find them on Instagram, and they sort of specialize in art from this area, and they've got some amazing pieces on there. And a lot of the artists locally are obviously influenced by Georgia O'Keeffe and a lot of the sort of landscapes around there. So if you want to find more contemporary artists who are looking at those landscapes, that's a good one to check out.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'll definitely look that up, and I'll put it in the show notes below. Jo, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about Georgia O'Keeffe. I think it's so obvious to the listeners, but for me recording now with you just have this l love and passion, which just is oh, just so genuine for her work. And I just think it's
Oh, it's an
brilliant.
absolute
So thank
pleasure.
you
Thank
so
you.
much. So I do have one question before we go, and it's a bit of a big one. So it is the Joe's Art History podcast, and my final question, and you can take this as large or as narrow to you as you wish, but my final question is, why is art
Oh,
important?
that's all that is big. It's important. Well, if it's important to everyone or important to me. Or is that a both question?
That it's hey, whatever road you want to go
I
down,
think,
Joe.
well, I think she, actually, when I think about it, I think that they are actually the same thing. I think art allows you, and this is true for me actually, and that's a whole other conversation, but it allows you to express things that you couldn't express in other ways. Particularly verbally or writing them down. It's amazing how a color, a brush stroke, a form, a shape can help you like showcase something you're feeling in a way that a word can't. I think that's my main reason why art is important. And that's it. Yeah, and it helps, and therefore it
I
helps
love that.
people, express themselves and help us sort of make sense of the world.
And so funny that you said that there, actually, because that reminded me of something that I read about O'Keeffe, and that's what she said about color, is that and form and shapes, is that she can express something better in a form than what she can in words. And she there's a quote that I read somewhere, it might be on the Metropolitan Museum of Art's website, where she says, words are not my
Ah, that's
friend, the
good.
canvas
So I
is.
remember that one. I should have said that.
So there you are. Well, no, just me,
Yes.
another akin moment with O'Keefe. Joe, before you go, where can
Yeah,
people
so
find you and connect
my
with you?
artist website is J.R. Oates. That's Oates with two T's, no E. jroatesart@.com, jroatesart.com, and I'm at jroatesart on Instagram and Facebook.
Amazing. And I will link all of that in the show notes below as well. Finally, thank you so much for coming on.
You
It's
too.
been
Take
a
care.
pleasure to talk to you. You too. And there you have it, the end of season one of the Joe's Art History podcast. First and foremost, thank you so much to Joe for coming on and speaking so brilliantly about Georgia O'Keeffe. I really loved researching for this episode, and I really loved speaking with Joe about it. It was such an interesting conversation, and it's always fantastic to speak to someone who has such a passion and love for the artist. So thank you so much, Joe. You were the perfect guest to end season one. Don't be sad, I will be back later in the year, around about September time, with a brand new season and a whole load of new art historical content. In the meantime, we have a back catalogue of 36 episodes, including this one, so there's plenty to listen to and to re-listen to. And as well as listening on Spotify and iTunes or wherever you find your podcast, you can also find every single episode as a YouTube video on Joe's Art History YouTube channel.
I'll leave a link to that in the show notes below. And the nice thing about the YouTube video is whenever I speak about work, we insert an image as well, so it saves you sort of running around and Googling trying to find the images. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please make sure to like, rate and subscribe, because it means you will not miss an episode when we return in September with season 2. As well as that, it also helps other people find the podcast. And hey, if you've really enjoyed it and want to tell a friend or family member about it, please feel free to do so. Word of mouth, as they say, is always the best form of advertising. If you want to get in touch with anything discussed throughout this episode, or of course the entire season of Joe's Art History Podcast, you can email me, joesarthistory@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram @joesarthistory. And while you're there, why not give me a little follow as well? It's always amazing to hear from people who have enjoyed the podcast and hearing about how it's inspired people in some way or how much you've learned from it. So it really means a lot when you do get in touch. And also, it's brilliant when you get in touch with my guests as well to tell them directly that you really enjoyed listening. It really means a lot. So if you perhaps don't want to leave a review or ping me a wee message, then why not ping Joe a message to say that you enjoyed this podcast? Joanne, I mean, not myself. And for the last time for season 1, I've been Jo McLaughlin, your host and resident art historian. Thank you so, so much for listening. I have absolutely loved putting this season together for you all. And I look forward to welcoming you next time for season 2 of the Jo's Art History Podcast in September. Until then, keep learning and remember, art is and always will be for all. See you in September.